You are Locked On Braves, your daily Atlanta Braves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Braves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, found where all your favorite podcasts are, whether that be iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, you know all the places. You can find us wherever you want to go. Locked On Podcast makes it easy to be the fan that you want to be, where you can find shows from your favorite teams every single day, helping keep you up to date without sounding all stuffy and making you sound like a nerd like yours truly here. Locked On Podcast, whether you want to listen to baseball, football, hockey, basketball, whatever the case, Locked On Network has something for you. Locked On Podcast Network, helping you be the fan you want to be. All right, so you guys have already heard the news by now. The Braves have come through with a, dare I say, monumental move, and I decided I wanted to do something a little bit special. You guys are going to get a double dip episode today. And joining me today to discuss this, one of the preeminent baseball voices in Braves Twitter, a fellow member of 680 The Fan, and a guy that we've had on the Platinum Sombrero podcast, but making his Locked On debut. Thank you guys for, and welcome along with me, Grant McCauley. Grant, what's going on?
Not too much, but then again, quite a few baseball things and fewer and fewer days between now and the start of spring training. So thanks for having me, and let's get to it.
This is one of those days that a lot of people in radio don't enjoy because you end up just talking one sport so much. But for a guy like me and for a guy like yourself, this has been quite a 2020 so far for Major League Baseball. Can we agree?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and obviously not all of it's been good. In fact, a large part of it has been not so great. But, you know, it's kind of part of the way that baseball, and I guess most sports, cycle. And hopefully we'll get to the bottom of the not-so-great stuff coming out of Houston and Boston and wherever else. And I get to focus on having players back on a baseball diamond doing baseball things again, because that's going to be happening sooner than later. So hopefully that'll be cathartic for everybody in the sport.
Now, I've got an episode coming out Friday giving my thoughts on the whole sign-stealing scandal, but I haven't gotten to talk to a lot of people. So real quick, what do you think of the punishment? Do you think it was too light, too heavy?
Not enough, and I don't think that it reached all of the necessary parties. I'm sure that they had to give immunity, if you want to call it that, to get people to cooperate with their investigation, but just based on things, whether it be the Black Sox or Pete Rose or what happened to John Coppola a couple of years ago, I just don't feel like this sent a clear enough message about how egregious this is. And I've said this and will continue to say it. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, because we haven't even really seen the player reprisal really hit its peak, because everybody's at home right now. But when everybody does get back, and the Houston Astros have to line up and play against other teams and also just try to maintain relationships and friendships inside the game, there has been a tremendous amount of damage done, and I think we're going to see a lot of that manifest. But for Lunell, for Hinch, I just don't think it was enough, to be honest with you. We'll see what happens to Alex, to Alex Cora. But other than that, I just really wasn't impressed, and clearly they didn't hit the Houston Astros where it hurts, which is in the pocketbook. So I was really just nonplussed, if you will, by the punishment for the Houston Astros.
It does seem a little bit odd to me that $5 million is the absolute max that they could charge somebody for something like that.
Yeah.
I do think, though, and I did get to talk about this a little bit this morning on the Front Row, I do think that the draft pick loss is the biggest thing, because it also hurts with their draft pool. But I'll detail that a little bit Friday. Today, we're going to talk about good news. The Braves have solved a large problem on their team, and that was who was going to replace Josh Donaldson in the four-hole in that lineup. They get Marcell Ozuna on a Alex Anthopoulos patented one-year deal worth $18 million, $100,000 more than the qualifying offer he turned down from the St. Louis Cardinals. I know what I'm feeling about this. I honestly did not think that Marcell Ozuna was going to be a Brave. I didn't think Alex would sign two QO players in one offseason. But I can't say that I'm upset about it. But Grant, how are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the biggest thing I thought when it came to free agents and who was left after Josh Donaldson decided to sign with the Twins was that I didn't see a deal that made a ton of sense for the Braves. If we were talking about 3-, 4-, 5-year contracts, which clearly a Marcell Ozuna or a Nick Castellanos or someone like that, I thought would be commanding. But to get Ozuna on a one-year deal, it immediately addresses the hole in the lineup and puts a guy that's capable of hitting 30 home runs into the cleanup spot, which I think was really what you wanted there. I didn't expect it to be a third baseman necessarily that was going to be the answer in the cleanup spot. Would I love to see a big splashy trade? Sure. Did I think that a trade was the most likely route at this point to fill the cleanup spot? I really did. And that was as of just over the weekend. But, you know, here we are within about 24 hours of this news breaking, and I'm pleasantly surprised that they were able to address this and not get bogged down in some kind of deal that you just felt like you're almost panicking and just paying somebody because you've got to have something. You've got to do something. You've got to get somewhere with this. And clearly they did, but not locking themselves into something that maybe they might regret in a couple of years, which unfortunately, if we're just being pragmatic about it, you know, Josh Donaldson at 34 years old might be a deal that in 2 years or less, we're looking at wondering, what do we get ourselves into? And if you're a front office executive, you got to think about that stuff beforehand and really weigh it out to make your decision.
I totally agree. And I said this once Donaldson got the 4-year and the 5th-year option. Essentially, he's getting paid through 5 years, no matter whether or not you decline or pick up the option. And for Alex, I don't think it was necessarily just about the money. I do think it's the years. You don't want to pay Josh Donaldson when he's 37 or 38 in a league that you don't have the DH yet. And there's no 100% guarantee you get it. I think the other part lost in that shuffle is people just kind of see the 4 and 92 and think, well, that's only $21 million. The problem comes in once you get to about year 3, and you're talking about now you're having to pay Acuna $15 million, I believe he would be making by the 3rd year of that deal. Ozzie will be making kind of peak end of what he's got, which still isn't a lot, but you've got to extend Freddie at some point. Now you start talking about extending Soroka and Freed and Dansby and a whole host of other young arms, guys like Sean Newcomb, if you decide to keep him around. Money will get tight at that point for a team that, while I'm very pleasantly surprised with what they've spent this offseason, I don't see them getting to a point where they're going to be comfortable in the Dodger territory of paying $190 to $200 million in payroll. They don't have the TV deal for that, no matter how good the battery does.
Yeah, I don't see that happening in terms of the $225 million payrolls that very few clubs in baseball have been able to have. I think the Yankees are at the top of the heap now with what they spent on Gerrit Cole in the offseason. And, of course, bringing on Giancarlo Stanton a couple of years ago didn't hurt when you talk about, you know, beefing up your payroll. But I do think that the Braves have enough infrastructure in place and ownership dollars in place behind them to be a club that can be in that top 10, even if it's just around where they are now, projected at $150 million. That's a payroll that I think gives you more than enough if you're creative, which I think this front office and the Braves have been in recent years, to make that work for you. And that might have been something that, and I've speculated on this, and I haven't gotten a confirmation either way, as to whether or not the Braves gave Josh Donaldson an offer that included a 4th guaranteed year. There might have been a 4-year offer, but they're not all created equally, so it might have been the case where it was something that might have been a vesting option, a team option, a mutual option, whatever it may be, and it might have just been at 3 years and never really got close to the Twins at the money that Minnesota was offering, and clearly the Texas Rangers didn't want to jump over that. I think the Washington Nationals, if they were in this derby, we all know that a lot of their bigger deals, if not all of their bigger deals, involved deferred money, and Josh Donaldson and his representation may not have wanted to go that way. So I looked at that deal a number of different ways. Would I love to see Josh Donaldson back in 2020? Yes. 2021? Yes. Beyond that, the questions really start to multiply because time always has a way of doing its thing. And unfortunately, and as we saw with this contract being the largest ever given out to a position player age 33 or over, clubs don't typically do this. So you can't really look at the Braves and say, hey, they missed the boat on this one. And I think they were able to go out and do something that on the back end of the disappointment of not having Josh Donaldson as your cleanup hitter, get somebody who has a chance to really impact the middle of the lineup. And I think Ozuna definitely does that.
Now, I've been pretty staunch that while Josh's numbers from the cleanup spot are tremendous, there are a number of players that could replace those numbers relative to the value that you're getting them. But I've maintained that the biggest loss with Josh Donaldson is not the actual statistics themselves. It's the presence he brings with him to a clubhouse. It's a very different type of presence. Acuna and Albies and Camargo and Freddie, they're all confident and fun. But Donaldson has that different type of confidence where it's, we're going to do great because I'm going to drag you guys because I'm better than everybody else. It's not something Atlanta had seen really since Chipper retired. It's just a different kind of dude. How do you feel about Marcell Ozuna being able to take that role? I don't know that I see him as that type of guy. Is that still to you? Is that still a bigger loss?
I don't know. I think production-wise, number one, and defensively too, that you're dealing with a drop off in certain categories, depending on how you slice everything up and who ends up, you know, winning the job at third base, and we'll see how that all plays out. But Josh Donaldson's confidence, I think, was a great thing to inject into that lineup. He had a credibility that was instantaneous whenever you bring in a former MVP, even coming off a challenging year because of the injuries. You still know what Josh Donaldson is and can be if he's on the diamond every single day, and he was last year pretty much every single day. And I think that really, when it comes down to it, this is a club that has a lot of good pieces in that clubhouse already. I think that Cole Hamels is going to be a good presence to add to that clubhouse. I think that he's a guy that's got no shortage of confidence, but has maybe mellowed a little bit as he's gotten older. But Ozuna's going to have that same kind of, I think, exuberant, sometimes flashy style that I think people like a lot. And I think that, obviously, Ronald Acuna, Ozzy Albies, Johan Camargo, they have this, it's just a style that not everyone on the team has. And I love that melting pot dynamic where not everybody is the same, but they all have that same goal. And watching them kind of come together and seeing what the personality of a team becomes, I really try to sit back and not go year to year on it and just let it happen and then start to kind of get a gauge of exactly what this group is together and what the individuals bring along. But there was a lot to love about what Josh Donaldson did. I think once he got dialed in and really started to connect with his teammates, and of course, once he started producing some big numbers, it was pretty easy to fall in love with having Josh Donaldson as your cleanup hitter.
It really is. It just seemed to be a match made in heaven. But going back to Ozuna, you are talking about a guy that in 130 games last year put up, 29 homers and 84 ribbies in a park that, quite frankly, if you look at Marcell Ozuna, the last 2 years couldn't really have gone any worse for him. When you look at what he was coming off of in 2017 with that monster year with Miami, goes to St. Louis and he deals with injuries over the past two seasons. 2017, he has the shoulder injury. Last season, just as he was starting to get hot, he broke a finger diving back into first base, I believe, and didn't really look right until the playoffs started. But when you see what he did against Atlanta in the playoffs, 9-21, just ripping the ball, it felt like he was more than 9-21. It felt like he was up every single inning. When he's on, he's one of the true difference makers in this league. And a lot of stuff is made about his defense. I happen to think that a lot of his struggles last year, if you look at the difference between his outs above average, which is the StatCast data, and his DRS and his UZR, which is more Fangraphs oriented, there's a large disparity, due in large part to he kind of makes some boneheaded reads and some inexplicable misses, a lot like Yoenis Cespedes. The biggest thing, though, has been the loss of the arm. I happen to think some of the arm will come back. When we're talking about shoulders, you don't really get away from it 100%. But I think this is a case where every player at this point is going to have some sort of warts. And I think Ozuna fits what the Braves like to do. He's not over that age hump. He's a guy that's going to slot in, and he's looking to reestablish value as well. And most of the time, those are the guys that come out and have big years for you.
Yeah, and they have a motivation that, you know, you like to think that everything's motivated by winning and the things that go on the field, but clearly this is a career and a business, and a lot of other things go into the minds of the players and, of course, the agents that are trying to, you know, maximize and find a great deal and, you know, get all the financial security they can for their client before their career comes to a close. But, you know, that aside, and kind of getting back more to the main point with Ozuna, is the biggest thing that the Braves needed to do was, I think, find somebody that they liked and find the deal that they liked. Again, like I said earlier, you don't want to get into the place where you're panicking and you're spending just to spend. I don't think that really does you a lot of favors. And in fact, I think it ends up getting a lot of GMs dismissed from their position eventually. But I think that they liked the player enough and saw enough, especially if you start diving into a lot of the StatCast data, the hard hit race, exit velocity, and even some of the unlucky numbers for Ozuna last year as far as his batting average on balls put in play and a lot of other things that just, they were very reminiscent of the same kind of things that they looked into to decide, hey, what is Josh Donaldson and what would he bring to us? Because we can't look at last year and just see the numbers and have them be the only thing that we look at. And at 29, I do feel like there's still tread on the tire, obviously. And hearing from Alex Anthopoulos last night, after they kind of looked over that data, this deal came together, really seemed like over the weekend, they believe that this is a guy that has the opportunity to become more of what he was in 2017 than what he was, say, the last couple of years in St. Louis. I think that Truist Park is going to be a place that'll be good for him from a home splits perspective. I think it's pretty fair to hitters. Not so sure about the way that St. Louis plays out. I'd have to kind of look at the ballpark factors and whatnot, but it doesn't seem like it's ultra kind. But I think Truist Park might be, pardon the pun, a little bit more true for him. And I think that he has a chance to really produce. He's familiar with the NL East. He hasn't been gone for that long. And I think you might find a much more motivated Marcell Ozuna that, sure, he may overrun a ball in the outfield or not dive at the right time or make some boneheaded play, but he's going to bring a lot more good than he's going to bring bad over the course of 162 games if he's locked in. And I want to see what he does with Kevin Seitzer on top of that. I think Kevin Seitzer does a great job of giving hitters the tools that they need to formulate a really good plan and go up there looking to maximize their results at the plate. So a lot of different things I like about bringing in Marcell Ozuna, the length of contract, the talent, the possibilities, and just the fact that you did have to do something and you didn't overreach and overreact and possibly spend yourself into a place where you're going to have trouble getting out of that in a year or two if you needed to.
I can't disagree with any of that. A couple more things, and I'll let you get out of here. I did think it was a little bit, I don't know if I want to say it was weird, but I did notice that when Anthopoulos was talking about how the starters are going to shake out, he did only mention Ozuna and Acuna as verified starters. And while you and I can fully expect that Marquegas and Duvall, who were expected to platoon anyway, I think we all know that neither of those guys were going to start over Acuna or Ozuna, and you're not going to pay Ozuna $18 million to platoon him. I did find it kind of telling that Ender's name didn't get mentioned. I don't know if you're hearing anything that I haven't heard, but how real is this a possibility that Ender might find himself in a platoon or maybe even traded away and Acuna playing more center field than maybe some of us thought he would in 2020?
Now, Alex Anthopoulos did mention Ender Inciarte by name, and he did say that the two guys who are going to be playing on an everyday basis would be Ronald Acuna Jr. and Marcell Ozuna for the reasons you just mentioned. Being that you do have Ronald's ability to play center field, that means that whether he plays 120 games in right field and 40 in center, or however they want to figure that whole thing out, I do think he's going to play some center field, but I would love to see him installed more so in right field. But if you have your two corner spots, you know, plugged in with Marcell Ozuna in left and Ronald Acuna Jr. in center, or in right field rather, that leaves center field. And obviously a three-time Gold Glover, if he's healthy and productive and can finally find some consistency to it, it would be nice to have Ender Inciarte back in the middle of those two and making it defensively a better outfield. But it also says that Nick Markakis and Adam Duvall are corner outfielders, so you're going to have to figure out how you're going to work them into it if you're the Braves, and this outfield is crowded. So I would not put past Alex Anthopoulos the opportunity to make a swap where, you know, maybe Ender Inciarte does go somewhere and they're able to fill a need somewhere else. I don't necessarily think that's a given, and you'd always rather have more talent than not. But Adam Duvall's contract is a non-guaranteed deal, which would tell me that, you know, there's really nothing set in stone that he's going to be on the Braves 26-man roster now this year. However, just saying that, 26 men gives you a little bit more flexibility with how you construct your bench, and perhaps he will be. But a long story short, I do think that the signing of Ozuna and the fact that you had Ronald already in place, but the fact that Ronald can play two different positions in the outfield, really all three if you wanted to switch it around depending on what you're doing, but it's kind of to get back to it, those three veterans will be something they're going to figure out in spring training, was what Alex Anthopoulos left it at. And he did say that he'd reached out to Ender and to Nick and to Adam to let them know, hey, this deal's coming. Want to let you know he's going to be part of the mix. And obviously what their expectation is going forward, which is bring all the guys to the spring, figure out what's going to work. But we know two pieces that are pretty much set in stone every night, barring injury. And I think that, hey, you just want to be as transparent as possible with your team so they know what to expect. It's a lot easier to manage people's personalities that way.
And I'm not in the feel-good business. I'm in the winning championships business. Whatever helps me do that is what I'm looking for. I do like that he kind of left the door open a little bit without mentioning the name of maybe if Christian Pache comes through and has a stellar spring training similar to what he had last season. You may see him up quicker than not on this Braves team, which would be fantastic because he's already shortlist defensive center fielders in baseball. He's already basically Byron Buxton right now. It's it's going to be something special to watch. But in closing, my final thing I want to ask is, now that the Braves are at $150 million, there's still some spots that could be strengthened. I don't know that I'd say there's necessarily a huge weakness on the team, but there's still a lot that can be done. There's still a lot of the minor league guys that you kind of have to thin out the herd a little bit if you're trying to progress some players up to AAA and whatnot. You've got a little bit of a logjam happening, particularly at starting pitcher. Do you think the Braves are done adding, or do you think there's something else in the works here?
I would say that they're always going to be open for the possibility of it, but in terms of making a big trade that brings on a whole lot of payroll, I would have to see it to believe it at this point, just given that $150 million, like I said earlier, is essentially is the 10th or 11th best payroll in baseball in terms of overall money, but it's also a record payroll for the Braves. So what they've done in terms of spending, I think, does send a pretty good message. If they continue to spend on top of this, I think that could mean, you know, impactfully speaking, there could be some big thing that could take place. And maybe it's not right now. Maybe it's at the trade deadline and you find somebody that you're going to be able to have around for, say, a year and a half or 2 years or whatever it may be. Maybe something similar to going out and finding your Justin Verlander on the trade market and being able to get that deal done at the deadline. But there are places they can add, but I do think that they've got enough depth and quality talent across the prospects that they have, the guys that they have on the 40-man roster already, and even some of the guys they're inviting to spring training that'll be interesting storylines to watch. But I don't think that you're ever going to see Alex Anthopoulos fold his hands and say, all right, well, I think my work is done, and I'm just going to sit back and watch. He's very proactive, and I think he's always kind of formulating what could be next or what they're looking for and keeping those fires going, so to speak, and those lines of communication open. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't necessarily expect after the Ozuna signing to see another big splashy thing happen before opening day, but I would love to be wrong about that.
Every time you think you have Anthopoulos pegged and you think you know what he's going to do, he goes around and does the exact opposite. So I'm fully expecting him to bring in Mike Clevenger tomorrow. So we'll see how it goes.
I'm all for it.
Regardless of how it happens, I feel you got to feel good about the Braves. They look a lot better on paper, a lot more balanced than they were a year ago, especially with that bullpen. So should be a fun season. Grant, I know you're excited for it. Guys listening, I know y'all are all excited for it too. But for now, we're going to leave it here. Hope you guys enjoy the second episode coming up a little bit later today. And Grant, thank you for joining me. I know I noticed on Twitter that you have a new podcast out today, for the Around the Diamond podcast.
Yep. I've got it's fromthediamond.com. You can find every episode of the podcast, and I've got a series going right now. It's a Braves positional preview series, some articles I do each and every year. It's kind of my prep, and I like to just pull back the curtain and share it with everybody else. So breaking them down, starting pitchers came out today. I've done the bullpen already, catchers, infield and outfield. And I think maybe during spring training, I'll highlight some individual prospects, but I always enjoy doing that, and people seem to enjoy it. So you can find that all at fromthediamond.com.
There you go, everybody. Go out there and support Grant, one of the best in the business. Grant, one more time, thanks for coming on, buddy. Look forward to talking to you during the season.
You got it.
All right, everybody else out there, hope you guys enjoyed. There will be another episode coming out around 6 o'clock-ish. Hope you guys enjoy. Y'all have a great day, and I'll talk to you guys again later right here on the Locked On Braves podcast.